Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Rise and shine, Atlanta. This is The Morning Shift. I am he, and he is I, Bo Morgan. They call me Squid Billy, and I'm a Gabby Award winner. She is the First Lady of Baseball, the Queen of Improv. She's a tofu taster, and she loves French fries. Miss Allie Mack. And then we have the All-American National Champion, former Atlanta Falcon, Michael, don't ask him what the P stands for, Johnson. And behind the glass, making it all come together, Mr. Dylan Dylon Matthews, number one Eagles fan and creepy waiver. Good morning, guys.
Did everybody catch up on their sleep yesterday?
No, but yes.
I think you did.
I did it.
Wasn't the way you wanted to.
No.
But I think you caught up at some point. Yeah, I think you did. So that's good.
I slept hard when I got home yesterday. It was like, walk in the door. Hi, honey. Going to bed. That's
good for you.
It. Going to bed. So, yeah, I caught up. What about you, Dylan?
I also did catch up. I did a lot of the same thing that Ellie did. I was like, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
I'm going to bed now.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up? That's not how you talk to Simone. Please. He didn't want, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
like you're going in a locker room.
I mean,
hey, what's up, man?
Yeah, that's not how you talk to Simone.
I mean, like, it wasn't the exact words, but
I think,
you know,
it was more like, hey, Simone, I'm home. If you don't need me for anything or have anything for me to do, can I maybe take a nap?
You think he's like, you think he's that guy? You think he's the, if it's okay with you, I'm going to hit a nap guy?
Oh, I know he's that guy.
No, absolutely not.
You know what's funny?
They are doing you dirty.
You know what's funny is Dylan popped up in a conversation randomly. Amy and I were talking about something else, and then Dylan popped up. She's like, he's such a nice human being. There's no way you don't go home and be like, hey, Simone, you mind if I take a nap? I'm kind of tired.
Absolutely
not. A little sleepy.
And actually, my memory just came back to me. Simone actually wasn't even there when I got home yesterday. So there's that. But usually she is there. And
you're such a nice guy, you even lie nice.
No, I'm not. I promise on everything. I forgot she wasn't there when I got back. So she wasn't even there when I got back. But usually how it goes is, I just say, what's up? I'll talk to her for a couple of minutes. Like, if she has to update me on, you know, ask her how her day was. So we'll talk for a few minutes. And then she'll be like, you going to lay down? Are you going to bed? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to bed. So, again, she knows the deal. That's my main point about this whole thing. She knows the deal. She knows the vibes when I get back. I'll talk to her a few minutes, and then it's time for me to lay down.
There was no social media content for you to film yesterday for her with someone winning a chain with you cheering them on in the background.
Oh.
I caught a second one.
Yeah. Thank goodness there's not. But there was, it was before, this was on Monday night. She was like, before you leave, I need you to help film one thing real quick for me after you do your show call. And I was like, okay. But it ended up turning out that I asked her before I was off. I was like, hey, do you still need to feel the thing? She's like, no, I don't feel like it anymore. You're released. So there are times where she's like, hey, I need you to do this. So
you're released.
Being a TikToker sounds stressful. Really does.
I mean, you're supposed to put out so much content.
Yeah,
every
sounds,
single
sounds stressful.
That
she constantly tells me how much she hates doing content, but at the same time, she loves it just because, like, she's clocked in 24/7. Yeah.
Vicious cycle for sure. Well, let's get you caught up on what's been going on since we last got to chat. Dodgers won the NLCS Game 2 against the Milwaukee Brewers 5-1. Yamamoto became the first pitcher since 2017 to throw a complete game in the playoffs. Justin Verlander did it in 2017. So Dodgers lead the series 2-0. Game 3 is tomorrow. Blue Jays and Mariners meet tonight for Game 3 of the ALCS. Mariners are leading the series 2-0. The Ravens have released C.J. Gardner-Johnson 1 week after signing him. The NFL has suspended Detroit's Brian Branch for one game without pay after slapping Kansas City's Juju Smith-Schuster in the face. Jerry Jones says the Cowboys are still in it and open to making a defensive trade. We'll get into that later. And USC and Michigan are questioning the proposed Big Ten private capital deal. Of course, our Falcons head coach Raheem Morris spoke with the media yesterday and gave us this much-anticipated update on Jake Matthews.
Today, all I know is it's going to be day-to-day. It was an ankle. So you know, we know who he is. We know what he doesn't miss. So we'll just have to see, Taren. But I feel really positive about him and what happened based on not having any idea last night.
I'm a little bit shocked. I mean, I guess with it being Jake Matthews, I shouldn't be surprised by this. But the positivity in Raheem's voice almost makes it sound like he's like, yeah, you know, could be back at practice by the end of the week. And I don't think he will be. I don't know how on a short week with a 6-day, you know, work week and a short turnaround and a West Coast trip that you would be like, yeah, day to day. Like, I'm shocked that we didn't just hear, yeah, he's going to be out this weekend.
Right.
But again, and Bo knows this better than anybody, I shouldn't be because it's Jake Matthews. Like, it just kind of is what it is, and that's what we've come to expect from him.
Yeah, if there's anybody that's going to play, it's Jake. I mean, go back to when AJ got her injured, and what verbiage did he use then? He didn't use day-to-day. He said he's week-to-week.
Correct.
Which made me think immediately that he was going to miss at least a game. He missed, what, two, and then the bye week. Well, he didn't miss the bye week, but we had it. I think he's going to play, and I don't think he's going to practice. I don't think he's going to. I think that he might be there for the walkthrough Friday before, you know, because as far as I know, it's a normal week up there. You know, it's, you know, you had Tuesday, they had treatment, you know, you had the virtual stuff, and then it would be a Wednesday, probably a walkthrough type practice. You know how Raheem kind of takes care of these guys, and then Thursday they'll practice, and then maybe Friday they'll have a little bit normal practice. But I think he sounds like he's going to play to me. I don't know why he would have said day-to-day. He would have said week-to-week. But it sounds positive. It sounds really positive. You know, we don't even know what it is. Was it a point where it felt like maybe he got hit and it was like a bad contusion and it felt like maybe they had to do x-rays or something? I don't know. Again, we didn't hear anything. Mm-hmm. There was no update other than the update I got, Jake out.
Yeah.
Ankle.
Yeah.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So it looked like a high ankle sprain, but this guy's played on a high ankle sprain before. The problem is he was in year one.
Yeah, a little bit different.
This is 180-something consecutive starts in, 184, I believe.
It almost felt surreal to see Jake walking up the tunnel with the trainers. Like, it really did. Like, it just it feels weird, and you've seen him get rolled up before. You've seen him, you know, have certain issues or maybe try to shake something off. It's not like he hasn't missed any plays in the last 10, 11, 12 years. But it almost felt surreal to see him walking up the tunnel. You're like, man, I didn't consider that to be a possibility today.
It's surreal, I guess, is a good term. It's kind of like humbling. There's certain guys that I feel like are Superman on that team as far as that I don't have to worry about them. And Jake Matthews is the guy. Like, I don't think – like, Jake Matthews is – like, when I've seen him, like, kind of struggle to get off the field before, not terribly. But this one, I watched the entire thing, and I was like, the way he was walking, I was scared. Like, I felt like that, oh, no. You know, that uh-oh, that pit in your stomach. And, you know, Bergeron got hurt, too, in the game.
Yeah, he got rolled up. Got rolled up from the back.
And let me tell you – let me ask you something, because you played. I saw him stretching, and in the huddle – he's like listening to the play call, and he's like almost like stretching, like he was setting, and more of like if he was at tackle than the guard, the way he it was almost like he was in a tackle set, and then then he ran to the line of scrimmage for the next play and got down, and I was like, and this is all in my head because I got the sky goggles on, you know, field goggles, whatever you want to call them, and I'm like,
binoculars.
I guess he's good.
Yeah, no, I've been in that situation before.
Did you do that too? You stretched?
Yeah, well, you're not really stretching. What you're doing is you're testing to see if it's going to hurt.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're just simply going,
how bad it hurts.
Man, that really hurt. Am I going to be okay on this play? And if not, I'm just going to lay down on the ground. You know what I mean? Like, that's the best thing you can do as an injured player. I messed up the very last play of my career. I mess that up, and I get so mad at myself about it. Mm. I got hurt. I knew it was going to be a bad injury. I could feel it because I had already had one on the other foot before. And I limped off, and I left the offense. It was a preseason game. I left, like, Mike Tyson, the offense, scrambling to find somebody to fill my spot, which I should never do. You should never do that. If you get hurt, go down on the ground. Let the other guy, you know, let them find your backup. Let them, you know, get him up to speed on the situation. Maybe he even gets a practice rep here and there. And then you kind of, you don't get dropped into the deep end. And I, oh man, I get so mad at myself when I think of that situation. I'm like, you idiot, hit the floor.
You know what's funny is Arch has a story identical to that, but slightly different. Him and Buddy Curry, I guess, had this thing where Buddy was like, you don't, and Buddy played linebacker back in the 80s with the Falcons. And he goes, you don't stay on the field. You get hurt, you get off the field. That's the rule. You get off the field. Not you get fined or something like that. It had some kind of thing. And so I think it was when he hurt his shoulder and he goes down and he like gets up and like just takes off and gets off the field. And they had to call a timeout because the backup quarterback couldn't find his helmet or something.
Yeah, there you go.
And he's like, and again, it's Archer's story. I don't want to butcher it too bad. And he's like, he goes like, the coach's like, what are you doing? He's like, he goes, you got to stay down on the field so we can get your replacement. And he's like, no. He goes, what do you mean no? He goes, nah, me and Buddy got a thing. You don't do that. You don't stay on the field. So it's funny that you brought that up. Because like, that's the story, I think. But,
There's just, and there's also at certain positions as well. Like, well, and at that point, I think that was a tight end snap. So I think that was in the back of my head. We were in jumbo formation. I was playing jumbo tight end. It was like, all right, they're probably not going to go jumbo twice in a row. But they did. And I remember him, poor Ryan Schrader at the time, he grabbed Ryan Schrader and he goes, get in there, Jumbo. And Ryan Schrader's like, I don't know what I'm doing. What? I don't play tight end. I don't play tight end.
But I can't imagine how many thoughts were going through your mind, though. I feel like you got to extend yourself some grace when something like that happens.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you're kind of in panic mode.
I was like, man, this ain't good.
I think a lot of times, you see it a lot lately, teammates will come over and be like, hey, stay down, or they'll call the trainers out. And as soon as the trainers run on the field, they're gonna slow the process down, right? That's just from my thinking of it. But these days, when anybody you notice these days, I almost feel like any NFL game you watch, if anybody goes down for any injury, there's always somebody that takes their helmet off and takes the knee, like in the near
they're
them.
Gas, though. They're exhausted.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, we're.
I will say, you used to see college coaches that would see players that were kind of limping, and they would point to the ground like, dude, lay down. Mm-hmm. Now the college coaches are terrified. They're like, I don't want to get fined. I'm not faking injury. Just whatever you want to do out there.
Somebody brought it up the other day about the inside 2 minutes in the NFL, and I think it's college as well. Sometimes the rules change a little bit, but if you get injured, you have to take a timeout.
I was going
to
say, or a 10-second runoff.
Yeah, 10-second runoff. And somebody was like, it almost brought it like, it's 2025. We're really penalizing people for players getting injured.
I'd rather it that than the other way.
I would too.
Where they're faking injury.
And that's the reason why.
Well, we've got a lot to get into during the show today. Coming up next, that final drive that sealed the Falcons' win on Monday night. Mike and Bo have been looking it over. They're going to break it down next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. Thanks for being here this morning on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are the Morning Shift. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan, Dylan hanging out as well. We're about to break down the 5-minute drive that sealed Atlanta's win on Monday. But if you're looking for plans this Friday, 92.9 The Game is in Athens ahead of Saturday's big game between Georgia and Ole Miss. Join Dukes and Bell at Grindhouse on Lumpkin Street for a special broadcast from 2 to 6. They'll have special guests and analysis, plus a preview of all the weekend's pro and college football action. That's Friday from 2 to 6 at Grindhouse on Lumpkin Street in Athens. Now, guys, let's rewind. That amazing game that we've all been basking in, Falcons-Bills, Monday Night Football. Let's go ahead and hear from Raheem Morris on that play with Felipe Franks.
It's been in the works for a while, but it's a copycat league. You know, you steal those things from other people. You know, San Fran, we've seen him run it. We've seen a couple people run it last week. His copycat Lee, and Felipe fits that mold. You know, obviously he has the quarterback background. He has some of those different things. We go out there now, 13 personnel. So he can definitely add that to us and some of those and some of that world. But you're always trying to get better. And when you're trying to get better, that entails stealing things from other people. And that was just a great theft moment.
I love the way he put that because it's so truthful. Mm-hmm. And it really is a copycat league. I remember offensively, defensively, you'd watch plays from around the league, going and watch tape, kind of break things down like that. But I distinctly remember on special teams, our special teams coordinator, Keith Armstrong, would have a cut up every single week of the plays that happened from around the NFL. It wasn't like, hey, let's get in here and watch hard tape. You'd do that too, but you'd have plays from around the league where you're like, man, check out what this team did. Check out what this guy did. Mm-hmm. Watch this guy. Watch how smart this play is. Watch what this guy's doing. And you'd kind of break it down from that angle. So to hear Raheem just be blunt, be like, copycat league, seen other guys do it, love it. It is what it is. And it was a massive play inside of that five-minute drive where you're able to, first of all, put one on the books earlier in the game where you did convert and get the first down. But in the five-minute drive, obviously he steps up, is able to draw them off sides in a massive, massive first down where you could just kind of hand it off three straight times to Algier after that and kind of settle for the field goal. So I thought that was really, really cool wrinkle as far as that drive goes.
Be creative so you want me to steal from somebody else.
Yes. Yes. Okay. That's exactly what we want.
Hey, I called for it, though. That's what I got a couple people who tweeted me. They're like, hey, didn't you want Warner to get a carry? I go, yeah. They're like, well, Frank's got one. I go, yep. I was like, it's kind of cool. I mean, I didn't expect it like that. I didn't think it would be like, you know, I just didn't think. You say it, and you're like, yeah, that'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then you forget it because, you know, you get in the game, and then they do it, and you're like, wait a minute. Is that
Right. And you know what? You remember us having this conversation when we were talking about Charlie Warner, and I was like, you know, I don't know. Because I said the other side of the coin is going to be the guy's never taken a handoff before.
Yep.
You're really going to trust Charlie Warner in this situation to take a handoff. There you go. Frank sitting there in our midst as a guy who has played quarterback before and has taken a handoff. I think you do trust him. We had this conversation, and I was like, I could see him doing a read option, but I didn't. The quarterback sneak was something I kind of didn't see coming, but you love it. I think it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
I love it.
I think I envisioned it more exactly like you did the read option where you just take it, and it was never a read at all. You were keeping it the whole time and just kind of, you know, burrowing in there behind the line of scrimmage and – doing your own version of, a little scrum, a little tush-push type play.
Yeah.
Well, let's zoom out on that entire five-minute final offensive drive. What was it about that drive that was so impressive to you guys?
Well, I think Bo and I kind of share the same sentiment. It was the fact that, and Raheem talked about this after the game, you just kept the pedal down. Like, you didn't really change much about your offense. I would say, if anything, Bijan was off the field more for the final five-minute drive than you would expect him to be. But I go back and look at the tape, and I hate to even say this out loud. I think he was exhausted. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, it was fine with me that you – that's what Algier's there for, in my opinion.
He got speared in this drive late. He goes down, and the DB comes across the top and spears him, and he came off the field right after. Like, literally, he gets up and goes off the field, and we didn't see him again. Tired is maybe one thing. I think he might have been – they had the slightly wind knocked at him. It was a dirty play. I think it was Taylor Rapp that did it. I had to go back and completely hone in on the number. I thought that, to me, the best thing about it was the fact that they used the short passing game as an extension of the run game because of the defense. You know, this is late. You've gashed this team. They've now adjusted in known running situations, and they've got five guys with their hand in the dirt, essentially, up front, and another two or three in the box. You know, they're crashing that safety down. You come out with a little swing, you know, a little sideline route there for Bijan, and you get eight right off the bat, and then that puts you in a short yardage situation. You're able to run the football, right?
Yeah.
And then you come back, and you get the false start by Wilkinson, which was a garbage call by the referees because it was no different than any other tackle does these days. Go watch Lane Johnson. You know, go watch Mailata. Those guys do the.
I say it all the time. If you're playing tackle and you're looking at the football and waiting for the snap, you're late.
You're late. Yeah, you're right. Late. So you're timing it in your head, and you're, you know, listening to the call. So, so that puts them at first and 15. Now they're back in the passing situation. What do they do? A nice short pass to Algier that's safe. Dump off. If you want to call it.
I think it was a screen.
It was a screen.
Yeah.
And he goes for six. And then, you know, Bosa is in his face. And you get the big throw to Bijan. It would be an amazing find. And Bijan doesn't have to get the first down. And you kind of continued the short passing game because of the defense they're playing.
I think it's interesting that in that final, and I don't know how many plays it was. What do we got, 10 before you just started running it up the middle with Algier right there at the end? I don't even count the last three plays because they literally have 10 guys in the box. Every single guy in the last three plays, the last set of downs is triggering coming downhill. So I think you had 10, 11 plays probably before that. Three of those passes go to Bijan, one of them to Algier. Like and those are passes. I'm talking about not handoffs. Those are passes. The rest of them just – and like I said, they did a nice job kind of mixing Algier in here. The first couple of plays are pistol with Algier, you know, and then you're motioning Bijan. And then you take Bijan out, and Algier stays in. And it was just very comfortable in the way you went about your business down the field.
This is where I get – you know, I listen to too much, and I get irritated because I hear people say, well – Be creative. But then in certain situations, well, I don't know why we're throwing the football there. Should have just been running it. You were throwing the football as an extension of the run game because of the defense. Mike just told you that with the short. When you're using the running backs in a passing game, most of them short, other than the pass to Bijan on the sideline, which was more of a, I know that he's there. I got to get this ball out. He underthrew it because he had Bosa in his face. Bijan makes a good job of stopping for it. I also think that Bijan is a receiver in this offense at times as well, especially with Mooney out. But it was all done to keep the ball moving, to keep the clock churning, and to get the first downs because of how they were loading up to stop the run.
Yeah, and I think the overall thing that I take away, and obviously I look at it, guys, from a very slanted perspective. Like I look at it and go, okay. Your backup left tackle's in. What can you do? You can run screens. Two of these plays were screens. One to Algier, one to Bijan. You also had, and I haven't seen this the entire season, you ran the speed motion with Tyler Algier, with Charlie Warner in the back there in the shotgun. You know how he kind of offsets? And you ran the speed motion with Algier and ran wide zone, which we have not seen. Algier does not run that play. That's Bijan's play. And you put Algier offset outside the formation, run the speed motion, and you hand it off to him where Michael Penix is turning around. And that's another way to help your left tackle because all of a sudden that guy's flying outside for contain. He's got to get contained with the speed motion. Michael Jarrell's able to kind of shove him out of the play.
And that was one that he almost housed that. That was a bump. He got bumped, and his right leg gets bumped as the defender and they're blocking and kind of knocks him down. He came up just short. But I just thought it was the only play I had a problem with. Was the decision by Penix.
That was right, dude.
First down, I think it's on the 19. And he's getting pressure, but because they were bringing it, man. They were not holding back at that point. And you do have Jarrell in there. And he throws it. He's Drake London locked in and he throws it. It should have been picked off
It should have been.
For a pick six.
Makes me sick to think about.
I think it was Bernard.
I
think it was Bernard that dropped it, the linebacker. But you get or Williams won. You got lucky there. You got a little lucky. But look, that's every game. But I just thought it was very creative. You knew what they were doing. You knew what you had left. You knew where you were, and you're like, let's use their aggressiveness in the run game as an advantage with the two screen passes. You know, getting it out to using Algier, you called it the speed, but the orbit, right, where he's orbiting around the back, which we saw a lot of, by the way, a lot of that Monday night. I hadn't seen that much. Have you seen that much with the backs orbiting in the plays where they're out wide and they're coming in?
Say they've done it. I don't know that we've seen it mixed in as much as we did the other day or utilized in the way where you have a play action off of it. You have a screen off of it. You have a handoff off of it. Sometimes it's Bijan. Sometimes it's Algier. Like you did a lot of different things coming off the bye week with it.
I guess that the final take for me, Allie, is we can't scream creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we use creativity to literally ice the game, but because it's not the way we're used to seeing them ice a game where it's just run, where they're using a short passing game, mixing their run in.
Have you genuinely heard somebody say that they don't like that last drive?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I heard a lot of it yesterday on here with callers and hosts. They didn't understand why they weren't running the football. And I'm like, I was like, damn, did y'all not see what they were doing?
Six and a half minutes left when we started the drive. What are we doing?
Yeah.
You're just going to run.
Not to mention they were loading up for it. And Jarrell, people are, you know, like, I think Jarrell did what you want him to do. But if you're watching and going back and looking, it was touch and go. I mean, it wasn't all perfect.
It wasn't great, no.
I am curious if someone listening is one of those that did not like that final 5-minute offensive drive. If you are, tweet us 929 Morning Shift or call us during the wake up call.
I think it's a good point, Allie, because here's what I will say for people that didn't like it: that ball should have been housed the other way, and it would have been a tie ball game. And you also are stopping the clock at that point, and that's what makes you sick. When you watch it, you're going, "That's a missed opportunity by them, and mm-hmm. we almost really screwed that up." And that's the danger of throwing in this 4-minute offense.
Yeah, that's the one play that I would agree with anybody on. But other than that, the drive was good. Got to trust your quarterback, though. He's only 8 games in. Got to make good decisions with the football.
Well, and it's 7 a.m. today. We are going to get to the good, the bad, and the ugly from Monday night's game. But coming up next, Week 8 of college football is upon us. Got a few major matchups to talk about next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Good morning. It's the Morning Shift. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan at 6:43. We've got the Mack drop on deck. We're going to talk about fan bases again and our mission to get the Falcons fans on the top of the rowdiest list.
Yeah, I love that.
But first, we got to talk about USC and Michigan. They are questioning the proposed Big Ten private capital deal. Apparently, they have similar concerns that the deal doesn't address the root issue, that the cash that they need in athletic departments these days, it doesn't solve that problem.
Yeah, it doesn't. It seems like a short-term Band-Aid, I think, is how they feel. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, nice. Yeah, cool. I think everybody would like to have $100 million plus dollars right now. But in the end, when you're talking about the soaring cost of all these athletic departments, especially at places like USC, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, like, you're going to deal with a lot of zeros being thrown around in the coming years. And I think that, you know, that's the reason there's a little bit of apprehension. We talked about this a week, 2 weeks ago, and I kind of felt the same way. It's like, are you really willing to give up a chunk of, and I guess you're not giving up anything, but you're creating Big Ten enterprises and you're locking in media rights deals for $100 million that who knows how long that's going to carry you. I mean, we just talked about James Franklin getting a $49 million buyout, and there you go, 50% of everything that's happening for the infusion of this deal. So I don't know. I don't blame the apprehension on anybody. I'd be curious to see how much power some of these groups actually have to stop this from happening, but it seems very short-term to me.
It was like taking out a second mortgage on your house to go buy a car with or something. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like the feeling I got when they said, they're like, hey, the soaring costs. You know what the soaring costs are? The fact that they're playing teams in – you know, you've got Rutgers playing Oregon. You know that, like, the trial. Like, why are conference regionally based anyways? So that they can travel and play other teams and not have these enormous costs, not take students, which there no longer are, really, not in football anyways, maybe volleyball and stuff, away from. Like, so all these things were done for a reason, and now it's just money, money, money. You're also essentially giving – you're essentially doing – and I'm not saying it's verbatim the same, but it feels a lot like what the ACC did with their media rights deal, where what you're going to do is you're going to sign in this deal, you're going to be locked in this Big Ten enterprise till 2046.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to lose control of your negotiation rights when you do that, so that whoever is running – whoever's funding you with the money is going to be able to run that. And how, when are you going to be able to get better deals as when you know other conferences that you think you're equal with get better deals? So it's gonna basically put you behind the eight ball. I think it's a bad deal. I think they're right, and I think Michigan and USC are two of the smarter athletic departments when you get down to it.
Well, and Mike, you just mentioned James Franklin. Speaking of him, Nebraska's Matt Rhule was asked about going to Penn State to be the head coach. He did not dismiss it.
I love Penn State. Met my wife there. It's my alma mater. Fan since I was born. I was born, I think, probably had a Penn State shirt when I was born. I love Pat Kraft. And really sad to see Coach Franklin go. I'm not going to talk a lot about job openings when they come. Maybe it's been a while here, but this is what happens when you win. I've dealt with it. You know, we've won at Temple, and I dealt with it all the time. I've dealt with Baylor. I'm not going to talk about those things ever. I'm not going to talk about my contract here. I'm going to talk about the team.
Yeah. So it's not a no.
Right.
I think it's interesting, man. Obviously, like he was just talking about, he's not, you know, he's an alum. He's always got ties back to the place. I guess my question, and this is what I'm going to throw a boat, like, is would Matt Rhule be somebody that Penn State should want? Like, he's a good college coach, I guess. I don't know. Like, I'm sitting there going, is Penn State not punching higher than that? I know Nebraska's what, 5-1? That's awesome. But I don't know. It just feels a little flat.
Relationship with the AD, alma mater. He's a Penn State guy. You know, I'm not trying to pick on Michigan, but you know, Michigan man kind of stuff. A lot of times these schools do like guys that know the environment, that fit in.
Sure.
They kind of just do that.
They understand the landscape.
I mean, Coach Hot Sauce, which was what I called James Franklin. James Franklin did a really good job with that program. The first person that would tell you that was James Franklin, though. He loved to talk about himself and everything he did. And
that's, dude.
Hold on.
That's not fair.
Let me finish. And I'm not sure if he ever really fit what they were there. That Penn State's a different place. It's a different place. I think Matt Rhule would fit perfectly there. I don't think they're going low either to get him. Matt Rhule's won everywhere in college he's at. He's got Patrick Mahomes in Nebraska at 5-1. I mean, excuse me, Dylan Raiola.
Did you hear Dylan Raiola say he's not going anywhere? He loves it here. I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be so sure.
Didn't you?
You're going to make it awkward.
Yeah, didn't you love your high school before you went to Buford? And didn't you love Georgia before you went to Nebraska? You know, money's listen, young man.
It'd be Dylan Raiola would be the quarterback for Penn State next year. You know what I mean?
Like, it's funny that Dylan Raiola says that when he's made decisions based on money as a high school and then as a high school kid before he even got to college. So I think Matt Rhule's there. I think that's probably, if I was betting on Vegas, I would say Matt Rhule's their next coach. And I'm not dumping on James Franklin. I'm telling you what he was and how.
You just said he loved talking about himself.
He did. And I'm trying to tell you that I don't think he ever truly fit the Penn State environment and what that Happy Valley is. He stuck. They were always looking to drop the hammer on James Franklin and get him out of there. And he was very successful. James Franklin is a good college football coach. Okay. Do I think he'll necessarily be coaching a top-tier SEC team or Big Ten team next year? No, I don't. I honestly think he'll probably go to the Big 12 and do well with somebody there that has an opening.
What's the turnaround time going to be for Penn State? When do you think we'll know?
They'll
take their time?
Yeah, it's they're not in any hurry. You know, they're not a playoff team anymore. With the three games that they've lost, there's just no way.
Okay.
And so, you know, I think you get to the end of the season and depending on what Nebraska or Indiana or whoever else they're targeting, depending on where they're at, that's kind of how you'll get your timeline.
Week 8 is upon us in college football, and number 5 Ole Miss is playing number 9 Georgia, 3:30 on Saturday. Lane Kiffin is already starting to send words Kirby's way.
Well, at some point he did, right? He talked about him at some point.
He was truly being Lane Kiffin in the words he had to say. We got it now.
Off-the-wall question, you and Kirby, two most probably some of the more demonstrative coaches on the field. Who do you think burns more calories in a game, you or him?
I don't know. That's a good question. I walked by the TV and saw his press conference today, so I don't look like he's burned too many calories.
Dude, got something to say about Lane?
I like Lane. You're taking something and making it personal. I'm telling you that not every college town is the same, which you should already know. I know you do. And then I don't think James Franklin, the way he was, ever truly fit in with what that fan base was. That he won, so they kept him. I think Lane Kiffin fits in with what Ole Miss is. All right? He has the haircut of an Ole Miss kid. He talks trash. I think he's partied before. Like, Lane Kiffin is, that's what SEC schools, other than maybe Vanderbilt, You know, they want their coaches to talk trash and win football games.
Here's the problem. What is the difference between James Franklin and Lane Kiffin when you get down to it?
I'm not telling you there is one.
No, no, no. I'm genuinely asking. You're saying that Lane Kiffin fits what Ole Miss is, and James Franklin was never part of the community. Dude, Ole Miss ain't this. This ain't Ole Miss. They're not trash talkers.
Yes, they are.
No, they're
I've
not.
I've been in the Grove. They like to
wear high heels and sundresses to the game with suits and frat boys.
You're right, because like, rich, hotty-totty people have never ran their mouths and played the elitism game. Ole Miss doesn't play elite.
Let me finish. Lane Kiffin, who did he lose to last year? That was a playoff team. Did he get him the playoff? They lost to freaking Kentucky, Florida, a bad Florida team. Like, they beat Georgia. You should have gone to the play. To me, they're the same head coach. The same guy. James Franklin's just in a situation where it feels like he couldn't punch up. And Lane Kiffin's in a situation where they're like, this would be great. Like, those are great
years. The situation is different because how many times did James Franklin beat? What is Georgia equivalent to in the Big Ten? Ohio State or Michigan? How many times did James Franklin beat one of those two teams? In his 12-year tenure, well, I think twice, okay? Kiffin's – and the other thing I'll tell you is the Big Ten is not as deep. They're top-heavy. Basically, all James Franklin could have been in a playoff every other year if he could have beat Ohio State or Michigan every other year, and he couldn't. He got there when they got in the 12-team playoff, and then he did do well there. I'm not telling you I thought James Franklin should have been fired. I told you yesterday I didn't think he should have been fired. However, I'm telling you, they were looking for a reason to get rid of him. They didn't think he fit their culture.
Quick reminder that tonight and each Wednesday night, you can join Damian Day-Lewis for Prep Sports Nation. A comprehensive look at the teams and athletes making news in high school sports across the state is brought to you by Ingles. Low prices, love the savings. That's Prep Sports Nation Wednesday nights on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. All right, we talked about the rowdiest fan bases in the NFL yesterday. I do have a mission to get the Falcons on that list, that fan base. I know it's not going to happen overnight, but we'll get there.
I'll join you.
With the recent release of Taylor Swift's album, the Swifties have been in full force. So I want to play the family feud of the top 10 fan bases in pop culture. Have you guys tried to guess them?
Okay.
And I'll go ahead and let you know, Taylor Swift is not number one. And
wow.
This is kind of all-encompassing over time. So it's not as of today. It's just over time. Who have been the biggest fan bases?
Okay.
Okay? Name right. some.
You want me to name some biggest fan bases?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some of the biggest fan
bases. The Bayhive.
In history?
The Bayhive is number 7.
Wow. Is this like in history or current?
In history. It's all encompassing.
Okay.
Dave Matthews.
No.
I'm thinking more along the lines. That's why I asked in history. I'm thinking more along the lines like Elvis or the Beatles. You know what I mean?
Beatles got to be out there.
Crazy fan bases.
We're not going back that far.
Okay, okay, fair. Okay, that's why I was wondering. I was like, eh.
It's according to Yard Barker, if you need a resource.
They don't go back that far.
They don't go back that far.
Is there like a Backstreet Boys?
Top 10 is, the number 10 is 90s boy bands.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, all right. I can see that.
What about movies?
Oh, we're going movies.
Oh, Star Wars fans.
Star Wars is number 2.
Okay. Harry Potter's probably on there.
It is not.
Well, then Lord of the Rings won't be on there.
No.
Well, I guess you would have the Marvel people.
Star Trek.
Star Trek is not on here.
That's weird.
I was
going to
say the Marvel people.
The
Marvel people.
Marvel people. Yes, Marvel is number 8.
There you go. All right, I'm on a heater, I feel like.
Couple TV shows in here as well.
Game of Thrones fans.
No.
Well, then, is like The Office people on there?
The Office.
There
you
go.
I mean, my wedding was Office themed.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. What other fan base? Are there any other TV shows on there?
There's one more TV show. It's got a resurgence on Netflix, but it went off the air in 2004.
Like Friends?
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Friends.
Ah!
And I'm going to tell you, so we've got 90s boy bands. We're missing one artist on here.
Give me a decade.
2000s.
Tough.
Bleach Blonde.
Can't be Lady Gaga. Is
Justin
it?
Timberlake?
Mm-mm.
Oh, Bieber?
It's the stands. Bieber's number 1.
Oh, Eminem.
Yeah, Eminem is number 9. Justin Bieber is number 1.
He's number 1?
Yeah.
Yardbarkers, they're dismissed. They're dismissed. I can't.
But number 5, the one you probably won't get because it's such like an underground cult culture, The Tim Burton movies, Nightmare Before Christmas, Batman.
I watched one of those the other day.
Edward Scissorhands. They're also good.
The best Batmans. The best Batman ever was. Now, Tim Burton, I love the original Batman. The original Batman is so good.
Yeah.
With I say the original, but the 91 or 89 with Michael Keaton.
So good.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's goofy. Don't get me wrong. Christian Bale was the best actor that played Batman, but I love the theme of Michael Keaton and everything. It was so good.
Is Adam West considered, I guess, the OG Batman?
Yeah. Because as a TV show, they did have a couple of movies that were just him and Robin.
They drove the Batmobile at regular speed, but then sped up the film.
Yes. No. But hey, the best part was every time somebody got hit, it was wham! It was
wham, pow!
Well, coming up, it is time to go through Monday night's game with a fine-tooth comb. The good, the bad, and the ugly are coming up next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.